Carabos are on Gimel and Beis. So if you recall, we were discussing David HaMelech's kingly duties during the day. And it says in the Gemara that the Chachmei Yisrael turned to David HaMelech, Adonenu HaMelech, and they told him that we have to support the poor people. So when they finally convinced David HaMelech that there's not enough funds to support the poor people, Omar Lahem, this is four lines up from the bottom of Gimel Amud Beis, Lechu Upishtu Yedeichem Bigdud. Go out and fight a battle. This is what we call a Melchemes Rishus. It means it wasn't a battle to conquer Eretz Yisrael and destroy the seven nations. That's a mitzvah. And that doesn't need, David HaMelech doesn't need the recommendation or the urging of the Chachmei Yisrael. But this is a battle that goes beyond the bounds of Eretz Yisrael. You might call it, but I'm afraid to use this term, an expansionary war. I don't want to use that term really because I don't think that David HaMelech was necessarily motivated to expand the bounds of Eretz Yisrael, although there were battles that he did fight, but I don't think that this is a reference to that. But rather his purpose here is to support the poor people. Obviously, that brings up a moral question, which should bother your mind, I think. It bothers mine anyway. There are, monetary pressures and issues that Klal Yisrael face. Does that give David HaMelech a right to go out to battle? And there are two parts to that question. Number one, he's endangering the lives of his soldiers, of Jewish soldiers. And secondly, he's going to take the lives of the other nations of the world.
Most battles are fought for economic reasons. That's why
right.
This one, the word lechem.
Right. But is that a Jewish attitude? That's what I'm wondering. Certainly in the Veldt.
The word itself indicates that is...
No, you're right. I mean, history is all about that. Imperialism and... I remember when America went into Iraq, there were those who claimed that it was for economic reasons. But I'm not going to say anything. I'm just saying that it should be understood and it should be taken under advisement on a halachic level, not just because the Umos Olam do it, but so that was my ha'ara here. Miad, okay, so now we go through the sequence. Now it's David HaMelech is ready to go to war, go to battle. But the decision of the Melech is not sufficient in this case. It's not a solo job because it's a Melchemes Rishus for the purpose of economic benefit.
One of the Mepharshim that we saw,
yeah,
says, because the Gemara says Miyad, that they knew David was against this whole idea of going out to war. That's why they went immediately while he was still in giving the Ezer to go.
No, really? He was opposed to the war?
No, that they knew that it was Mamas. They got the word of the Jews.
Yeah? Where is this? Do you have it here in this book or a different book?
I saw it in the Yilkut.
Yeah?
The back. I forget where.
I'd love to see it inside. Do you have it underlined by any chance?
Yeah.
Here on the right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think
he
mentioned it.
I don't see it.
How did we come up with such a name?
No, you must have seen it if you came. But the question is, where is it? See if you can find it, because that really sort of derails me. Because my impression was that it was David who took the initiative and said, "Lechu pishtu yedeichem bigdud." All right, so we'll come back to that a little, or as soon as you find it, let me know. In the meantime, we'll just so that we don't waste that time, we'll go on. So miyad yoatzim b'achitofel, that's step number one. They take an eitzah from Achitofel. Okay, this means that Achitofel, as Rashi points out, is the military genius. Correct? And he's called the Yoetz, as we'll soon see. Yoetz is someone who plays a role as a counselor or a guide, an advisor, excellent, all the words above. And he is going to be the military advisor. Rashi actually goes into detail about the different types of military strategy and advice that he would have to give in order to prepare the troops for battle. Correct? You found it?
Yeah, it's this first two lines.
Very strange. What question is bothering him? I'm wondering.
What the word miyad is doing.
What was the rush, you mean?
Yeah, it says, right after he told
with
them
urgency.
To do, they immediately went to Akitofa. Why?
Right.
The word miyad.
I hear. I mean, this would support my question, the premise of my question, that there was some moral issue that David was very hesitant about.
I think he also mentions because people get killed in wars, it's a heavy decision.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, well, at least he had the Urim V'Tumim to rely on. Okay, so what goes on now?
No, he said, because even though if you're going to win the war, it doesn't mean you're going to have lost.
Right. Could be the Urim V'Tumim is telling you you'll win the war, he's not telling you whether you're going to lose anyway. And frankly, I am totally boggled by this Rashi here. Rashi says, "Not limen reshus," and I would have said to Rashi, "Quit while you're ahead." Meaning, this is good. Not limen reshus. That is actually the halacha that you can't go out to a milchemes. Even a king alone, independently, cannot decide to go out to a milchemes reshus. He needs for a Melchemes Rishus to get the green light, the okay from Sanhedrin. But then Rashi said, Kadeshis Palalu Alehem. I don't know how to translate those three words. Anything in the back here on Kadeshis Palalu Alehem?
There was something that said he didn't really need this Rishus from the Sanhedrin. It was to honor them so that they would turn around and pray. Because the prayer was like a necessary thing, but it wasn't as necessary.
But does he explain why Sanhedrin? That's what boggles my mind. Sanhedrin plays a role in Tefillah. We had in Makkos a whole discussion about the Kohen Gadol and his power of Tefillah. But where do we have Sanhedrin? That Sanhedrin plays a role in Tefillah. I never came across that. What did he say? Yeah, what does he have?
I underlined it.
Yeah. What does he say?
Yeah, no, we did that.
Yeah.
But does he say why Sanhedrin? Just, I mean, obviously Sanhedrin was a great body that was made up of 71 elders. I mean, these were the Chachmei Yisrael. But where do we find that the Torah Sanhedrin, they have a din of tefillah? And then I'm missing that piece of the puzzle.
The way our Torah very much is that they're only asking our shoes.
Right, no, but I'm asking a different question. Granted that this whole process is to win over the Sanhedrin, so they'll pray on behalf of the battalions. But I'm just wondering, where does Rashi must be coming from somewhere, either Yerushalmi or Medrash. I don't know what source Rashi has. And that source is laying down a very new premise. At least to me it's very new, that Sanhedrin, qua Sanhedrin, the Torah Sanhedrin, plays a role in Tefillah. I don't know where that comes from. Vaiter, what else? Then Visholim Ba'uri V'Tumim. So Rashi Im Yatzlichu. They have to know that they're going to win the war. I mean, it would be a pretty grave error to go out to war and battle if you don't know you're going to win the war. Omar of Yosef, Mikra. Where do we see in the Pasuk that this sequence is absolutely necessary? So he quotes a Pasuk in Divrei Hayomim. And the Pasuk reads the following. V'achrei Achitofel. Now here you have Girsa problems. There are different Psukim. There was Yehoyada ben Binayahu. And then there was Binayahu ben Yehoyada. So there was a father and son. So in any event, our text of the Gemara, which apparently reflects the Girsa of Rashi and Tosus, has it Binayahu ben Yehoyada, but it, you know, paradoxically the original Pasuk says in it Binayahu, it says Yehoyada ben Binayahu. Now, in any event, we're going to see that this person is going to be the head of Sanhedrin. Vav Yosar Visar Tzava Lamelech Yoev. So let's go through it all. Achitofel Ze Yoetz, and the Gemara is going to quote a pasuk to prove that Achitofel was the military expert. V'chein hu omer, as the pasuk says, and now the pasuk is in Shmuel Beis, V'atzas Achitofel asher yoatz bayom mahem kasher yishal b'dvar Elokim. So who was, or yishal ish b'dvar Elokim, right? So what was the role of Achitofel? He was the advisor. And then who actually went out to battle? That was Sar Tzva Lamelech Yoav. That was the general. Achitofel gave the Eitza. Binayahu ben Yehoyada represented the Sanhedrin. Ev Yosar is going to be in charge of the Urim V'Tumim. And then there was the Sar Tzava Lamelech Yoav. And he went out to the battle. He was the general. He quotes here a Mishnah in Sanhedrin, Ein Yotzen Mulchemes Rishus El Al Pi Bezdin Shel Shimon V'Echad. And then of course we saw in Rashi that the Sanhedrin plays another role, that they would be Mispalel. I guess they had many different roles to play and many different attributes. Alright, so let's move on now to Daf Dalid Amud Aleph. Binayahu ben Yehoyada. Again, that's the girsa that we have here. Binayahu ben Yehoyada. Ze Sanhedrin. And he represents the Sanhedrin. But again, it had to be a decision of the Sanhedrin. I don't think he can make a solo decision. And then it says, Ev Yasar is Elu Urim V'Tumim. He says in this note over here, that Hayu Sholim Ba'urim V'Tumim Al Yidei Ev Yosar. So Ev Yosar was in charge of the Urim V'Tumim. You know, to ask the Urim V'Tumim a question wasn't so simple. There's a whole process. So that was Ev Yosar's role. What do you say, Michael?
Did you have to be the Kohen Gadol to do that? Was he the Kohen Gadol?
Right? Yeah, it seems that he was the Kohen Gadol. The only problem is that it seems from a different text, which is called Seder Olam Rabbah, that Ev Yosar, even though he was a Kohen Gadol, he was not successful in that particular historical period in getting the answer from the Urim V'Tumim. Again, this is something that's historical. It's not relevant to our sugya, but in any event, Ev Yosar was going to be replaced by a fellow named Tzadok HaKohen. You see, Rashi says that Ev Yosar was in this role, this is four lines down from the top, Kol Yemei David. But then if you remember, Avshalom was the son of David who rebelled against his father. And at that point, Ev Yosar lost his ability to function in that capacity. And then they asked Tzadok. And Tzadok was the one who replaced Ev Yosar and apparently was more successful.
We were just reading the Tanakh. It seemed, just as you came in, the reason was Ev Yosar actually changed sides. And then Ev Yosar supported Avshalom.
Right.
And therefore
he lost his status.
He was removed
from Kahuna.
They replaced him by
Tzadok. Yeah, we're going to see about Achitofel also. He was, at some point, he jumped ship. Yeah. Next, B'nayahu ben Yehoyada ze Sanhedrin vev yaseilu v'tumim v'kachu omer. And now he quotes again the pasuk in Shmuel Beis, a pasuk in Shmuel Beis. Uvnayahu ben Yehoyada al hakresi v'al haplesi. And the way Rashi interprets al hakresi v'al haplesi, as we'll soon see, it's a reference to the Urim v'tumim. And the Gemara is going to immediately ask why the Urim v'tumim is called kresi uplesi. But in any event, we see that in this pasuk, Binayo ben Yehoyada comes before the kres, before what's his name, Evyasa, correct? Mm-hmm. First you have Binayo ben Yehoyada, and then you have Evyasa. So if Evyasa is a reference to asking the Urim v'Tumim, it seems that Sanhedrin has to be conferred with first. And only after we get the okay from Sanhedrin, then we go on and we take counsel with the Urim v'Tumim. So that's what he writes over here. Mitchila notlim reshus mi Sanhedrin, in this note. V'rakli achar mikan sholim bi Urim v'Tumim im yatzlichu. So that's why in the pasuk that we began with, Evyasa's name is mentioned after Binayahu's name. Because Evyasa is the kohen who's going to ask the Urim V'Tumim, and Binayahu is the head of the Sanhedrin. So first we have to ask Sanhedrin, and only then do we ask the Urim V'Tumim. You get the impression that we don't want to mess around with the Urim V'Tumim. You know, we only use it when everything is sort of locked into its place. And when we know that everything is, you know, a go-ahead, there's the green light for Milchama, then to clinch it, we have no choice but to find out whether or not this military campaign will be successful. So we ask the Urim V'Tumim. Now, the Gemara is going to raise the question as to why the Urim V'Tumim is called Kresi Uplesi.
But if we're asking if we're going to be successful, and it said no, wouldn't that mean we wouldn't go out to war?
Right.
We'd still go.
We would not go out to war. I don't think. Again, unless you saw something that I didn't see.
No,
let me know.
So it
doesn't. But I'm treading on very dangerous ground over here. You know, whatever I say will be held against me. But
yeah,
I don't think.
It would change the whole plan.
Right. I don't think there's any hesitation to go out to war that you're going to lose, you know. And by the way, we'll soon see later, because of this name Kresi Uplesi, that once the word is out based on the Urim V'Tumim that we're going to lose the war, we are going to lose the war. That's what Kresi Uplesi means.
Nothing you
can
change.
Nothing you can change. You know, the whole Klal Yisrael could do tshuva. You know, there's such a din by a Navi that a Navi, if he gives a Nevuah L'ra'ah, and then Bnei Yisrael does tshuva, is the Nevuah's Choseris. God could rescind the Nevuah L'ra'ah. But we'll soon see, based on Kresi Uplesi, that name, that by Urim V'Tumim there's no help. You know, tshuva is not going to help.
Rav mentioned that the Kresi Uplesi, then they would go out to war immediately because it could change.
Right.
So here, let's say if it came out negative, they waited a while and went back and asked the same question a month later.
Could be. They gave it a time period in which Bnei Yisrael did tshuva, and maybe they had a tiny tzibur. I don't know the dinim. But before we get to this Kresi Uplesi, I just want to point out that if you go back to the Mefarshim on Tanakh, you know, and the Mefarshim want to interpret the Psukim based on what we call Pshuto Shel Mikra. So there are a number of different Mefarshim, starting with the Targum and going to the Radak and the Ralbag, who have a whole different interpretation of what Kresi Uplesi means. So just for your own, you know, your own edification, according to the Targum, which is quoted by the Mitzudas David, who's the classical Pshuto Shel Mikra, you know, whenever you want to know Taich and you don't have an art scroll, you go to the Mitzudas David. So he says that the Kresi Uplesi were different types of battalions in the army of Hashem. In the army, in this case, of David HaMelech. So what we have here is that the pasuk is telling us that when the Sar Tzavah went out to battle, he went out with the Kresi Uplesi. And he tells you exactly what role the Crazy plays in the Milchama and what role the Placey plays. There were those who were archers, who shot arrows. And there were those who threw stones. You know, I guess big boulders, like you saw by Goliath with David, you know, David and Goliath. Then he has the Radak. The Radak says that Crazy and Placey are names of families in Israel who were so close to the king that they actually saw the king. You know, there were rebellions going on, but they were considered the loyal families to the king. And I guess the pasuk is trying to convey that they were first on line, you know, to go out to battle. It wasn't something, let's say, that was immediately public knowledge, you know, that we're going out to battle. It was kept hush-hush. The Ralbag is a third pshat, and he says that Crazy Place is referring back to B'nayo Ben Yoyoda to Sanhedrin, and they were the families in Israel who were the Chachamot Biyoter. They were the wisest sages in Israel, and the members of the Sanhedrin came from these two families. So yeah, I'm just telling you, that's not what we're going to see in the Gemara, but very fascinating. So Gemara says, V'loma nikra shmam, Crazy Place. And the Gemara answers, Crazy shekarsim divrehem, Placey shemufloim v'divrehem. So before we see Rashi, if you don't mind, I'm going to take a stab at this. And the reason I'm doing this is because Rashi says something a little bit differently than what I thought was pshat in the Gemara. I thought karsim divrehem means that we have no choice but to listen to them. Like, for example, the Torah says that when a man divorces his wife, he gives her a get krisus. Krisus means that once the get is delivered, there's no reversing. She's divorced, which in the case of a Kohen is a real problem. He can never retake his wife. Placey, the Gemara says, Mufloim. Mufloim means, Viloshin Pella. Pella means that we're absolutely flabbergasted by the wonder of it. It's so supernatural that we can have a way through the Crazy Placey of knowing what, you know, divine knowledge for the future, what's going to happen. So that's what I thought was pshat until I looked in Rashi. Rashi says, Shekorsim es divrehem, Shaomrim dvarim ktsuvim ugmurim. And I think what Rashi is talking about is the clarity of the statement. You may remember that when Chana comes to Eliyahu Cohen, he accuses her of being drunk. Do you remember that story in Tanakh? And the Gemara says that the reason why he accused her of being drunk is because he misread the Urim V'Tumim.
He read Shikora instead of Kishera.
Kishera, correct. So obviously Rashi is coming, in a sense, lafuki in the case of Eli, so to speak, and he says, Ktsuvim Ugmurim. Gmurim means when I tell you something and you have no doubt about what I say. It's absolutely crystal clear. Shelo yifchesu velo yosifu.
Cut and dry.
Ktsuva means, yeah, cut and dry. Cut and dry.
Yeah.
Right. So ktsuva means there's a beginning, a middle, and an end. And it's a, you know, we used to say a subject, a predicate, an object, right? You know, the sentence is clear. And Rashi says that you can't add anything or subtract anything. So as Rashi interprets Crazy as the clarity of the statement, I thought that Carson means it's irreversible. That it won't be changed in any way. You know, the future is being predicted and it's like set in stone. Rashi doesn't say about Mufloim a word. He says here, Dvarim Ne'emarim B'derech Nes Upela. Okay, so that I think would support our pshat that it's all very supernatural and very miraculous. Okay. Now he's got pages and pages of commentary here on Crazy Place. I push it, ran out of energy here because I think we should go on. But if you push me on it for a future time, you know, I'll go through all this stuff here. It's mamish. Unbelievable how much is written here on this phrase, Crazy Placey, in the literature, which Sugi is flying all over the place. In any event, so we're up to the last stage. The Achar Kach, the Gemara says, based on the pasuk that we started with, Sartzovel Melech Yoav. Yoav was the general who went out to Milchama. Om Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Ada vi Amri Le Om Rabbi Yitzchak Bered Rav Idi Mikra. Where do we see some sort of a remez? Rashi says that David HaMelech was awoken by the kinar. Because remember, we had a problem here. If David HaMelech, with a kal v'chomer from Moshe, was not aware of when Chatzos is, so how did he wake up at that time? So we gave the answer that the Ruach Tzfonis, you remember, blew into the kinar. But how do we know such a thing? You know, we're inventing this whole historical, you know, puzzle, piece of the puzzle. What's the basis for it in the scriptures? And the Gemara answers, and this is based on a Kapitel Tilim in Zion, it says, Ura Chivodi, Ura HaNevel V'chinar, Ira Shachar. So again, there are a lot of complicated parts to this pasuk, but let's start backwards. The last two words in the pasuk say, Ira Shachar, which means that I wake up the morning. What does it mean, I wake up the morning? So I think we discussed this last time, that normally a person is sleeping in bed, the morning wakes him up. You know, it doesn't give you a chance to stay in bed. You know, the sunlight streams through the curtains, through the windows, and so forth. But here, David HaMelech is saying, Ira Shachar, I'm able to get up before Shachar could even wake me up. Before you tell me what to do, I'm going to tell you what to do. That's sort of like what David is saying. But what does this have to do with Ura Chivodi? Ura Chivodi, Rashi says the following, Al Tiskabdi Bishina Bishena Kishar Malachim. It's very amazing here. This is almost like a split personality. David is talking to himself as if he himself was somebody else. It's almost like you, instead of saying yourself, I'll do this, you turn to yourself and you say, you. Now, it's a very interesting, shall we say, poetic license. And what does it mean, Ura Chivodi? Rashi says that normally a king will be allowed, you know, in terms of the respect that we have for the king, to sleep late. Maybe he was up late the night before, I don't know. But David says, Al Tiskabdi Bishina. He turns to himself and he says, don't give me the covet of allowing me to sleep. Or Ira Shachar. I'm different, Rashi says, and this is Rashi is sort of introducing the next Gemara, because in the next piece of Gemara we're going to see a whole discussion about how David contrasts himself with other Malachim, and unfortunately I'm going to say those are Malchi Goyim. So Rashi says here, Or Ira Shachar, David is saying that I am different than the other kings because I wake up the Shachar. Okay, and how do I wake up the Shachar? So that's the next part of the pasuk. The pasuk says, "Hanevel v'kinar." These instruments are hovering over my bed, and they allow me to get up before it's daybreak and cut down my sleep and get right to work. Whether getting right to work means a little bit later on in the day, the kingly duties, or maybe in the middle of the night. We said he's being mechaber, you know, Tehillim, Sefer Tehillim, Shiros, V'Sishbachos. I have one note here that I wanted to share with you, and this is based on the Marsha, that there are three different types of awakenings here. There's Ura Chivodi, there's Ura Hanevel V'Achino, Ira Shachar. And the Marsha wants to claim that these are references to three types of hisorus. We wake up and we energize ourselves for three different purposes. Number one, the first one he calls misorer lidivrei atzmo. Right? So he has things that he has to take care of for himself, and perhaps that's a reference to Esek HaTorah. You remember we discussed this in the piece from Rav Kook. Right? We did a piece from Rav Kook last week. No? Yeah? You were there, Evan. So the first half of the night when he was misnamnim kisus and he was in and out of a state of half slumber, that's when he dedicated himself to his own personal development, which was Esek HaTorah. Then number two is misorer al yedei dover acher, which again it's a little bit different here in the Marsha than what we discussed, but it means he's awakened by some other factor, by some other object, in this case by the Nevel V'chinar, or we could say it's his orus for the sake of the Tzibur, of the Klal Yisrael, And then the third level is Shema'orer Acherim, Ha'ira Shachar, which means an active verb in which you are the Ma'orer. In the first two cases, something else was Ma'orer him. But here, he's being Ma'orer. And maybe it means that he's symbolically going to awaken others and have an influence and impact on them. Now we get back to our original question, did Moshe really have no way of knowing when is Chatzos Laila? And that's the parsha here in Shmos, Perek Yud Aleph, about Makas Bechoros. So Reb Zera Omar, Moshe Liolam Havi Yoda, that in fact Moshe Rabbeinu knew exactly when Chatzos was. V'David Nami Avi Yoda, and therefore we have no reason to assume that David didn't know. I mean, that was only because we had a Kalvachom from Moshe. But now if we assume that Moshe knew, then David also knew. Again, if David knew exactly when Chatzos is, because Moshe Rabbeinu knew, then what was the purpose of the naval v'chinar awakening him up at Chatzos? I mean, I would have answered that question by saying that maybe he had the ability of knowing when Chatzos is, but he was sleeping at that point. But the Gemara is assuming that he never slept past Chatzos, and therefore he wasn't sleeping. But maybe he wasn't sleeping past Chatzos because the kino woke him up. So maybe that's exactly what the Gemara means. Let's see if I can fit this into the Gemara. The Kevan the David Haviyada, if David in fact knew exactly when Chatzos was, is the Kinar Lamale. Well, we had this whole presentation that the Kinar had to wake him up. Why is that necessary? And the Gemara answers, Litu'ure Mishenaso Mishinsei. The Kinar had to wake him up from his sleeping. Yeah, because if you remember, Abzerah said that until Chatzos he was in this half state, like a horse. He was awake and he wasn't awake. So therefore he had to really be totally awake, you know, and give it all his focus. And that he needed the Kinar to wake him up. Kevan de Moshe Haviyada. Oh, this is the next question we should have asked ourselves. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu says that Makas Bechoros is going to happen kachatzos, and this chof usually means it's an approximation. If Moshe knew exactly when chatzos is, what was he concerned about? Shemoshe kasovar, shema yitu it's tagnine par. I would know exactly when chatzos is, but I'm not sure that all of those who see the stargazers of Paro, the Tagninim, the astrologers of Paro, that they would know exactly when Chatzos is. So they think the Chatzos is, let's say, at 1 minute to 12, to midnight, and really Chatzos is not until a minute later. The Yomru, and they'll say, wait a minute, there's no Makkah here, it's Chatzos, you know, the clock struck midnight, Cinderella, the whole story, and then there's no Makkas Bechoros, Moshe Badoi. Moshe's a liar? Who? So Moshe has to do whatever he can to avoid a situation where the onlooker will suspect him of being a Badoya liar? Diomar Mar, and this is a Brisa, Lamed Lashoncha Lomar Eini Yodei, I get used to saying I don't know, even if you do know. Why? Shematis Badeh, you think you know, but you're not 100% sure. And if it turns out that, you know, it's 10% chance that you didn't know, and you didn't know, you made a mistake, is te'aches, you'll get caught on your words, and people are going to say that you're a no good liar and you fabricated the truth. It means there's not a problem of sheker here. I mean, if the Gemara thought that there was a real serious chashash, sheker, that he didn't have enough knowledge and he was really lying, then I don't think the Gemara needs to stretch its arm out to this new formulation in this brisa of Lamed Lashoncha Lomar Eini Yodea. Apparently we're talking about a case where although he has enough reason to believe that he knows the truth, nevertheless he still hesitates and should not reveal what he thinks is the truth. Not because of Chashash Sheker, in Hilchos Sheker he's allowed to say it, but because others, in case he turns out to be a liar, will accuse him of being a liar.
Maybe he's perceived to be a liar.
Or, oh, yeah, that's good, Michael. Yeah, you're saying better than me.
Well, it's not right.
Yeah, as you said that, I looked in the footnote here. He quotes the Rosh Yosef. That's the same author, the Prima Gadim. And he says, Afal pi shato yodea. So that's your pshat, not my pshat. I said he was 90% sure. He's saying that he's 100% sure. Belishum pikvuk, he says. But nevertheless, lehamon, the people out there, in their perception, as you said very well, ain't a dover, move on, it's not understood. And therefore, yomer alav sheni yodea. Now, it's really, he's telling the truth. But they misconceive it, and they think he's telling a lie. In any case where you have reason to believe that they'll come to the wrong conclusion and therefore accuse you of what? Of being a liar, you should avoid saying even what you know to be the truth. This is all, Rabbosai, part of the general halachic area of what's called chashad. You familiar with that? V'yisim nekiyim. That a person has to go overboard, bend over backwards to make sure that people, the Gemara says in Shabbos, for example, you have a house that has a window that faces one road, and a window on the other side that faces a different road. So you have to light Ner Chanukah on both windows, even though Ner Chanukah only requires Ner Yishubesa one candle. But in this case, Mishum Chashad, somebody going down this road, this path, he doesn't see a Ner Chanukah in the window, he'll suspect you. So we see in general the Torah, the Halacha, demands that you go overboard to make sure that no one, and in a case where somebody might suspect you of lying, then you have to go overboard to avoid saying, even though you know it's true. Now, Rabbosai, why the Gemara debates, you know, whether or not Moshe and then David could know exactly when Chatzos is or couldn't know when Chatzos is? I don't know. He has a whole long discussion about this in the name of the Yaros Dvash. Does anybody know who the Yaros Dvash was?
Ibishu.
Correct. Excellent. Harvey, I'm very impressed. Rabbi Yonis and Ibishitz. He was a little bit of a controversial figure in his time. Do you know why?
Yeah.
Apparently he was suspect. I don't know if it's true, but there was a libel against him that he wore a kamir.
Yeah.
Kamir, you know, was those necklaces that had writing in
one. He traded in them.
He traded in them? Oh, he sold them.
To him for kamirs.
Uh-huh.
And that was a problem.
Yeah, at the time of Shabti Tzvi, yeah. Yeah, because at that time Shabti Tzvi was... in any event, so Rabbi Yonis and Ibish, it's a whole discussion here about Chatzos. Maybe if we have time we'll go through it. I'm a little bit embarrassed to read this, Rabbi Yonis and Ibish, it's because he assumes that the sun revolves around the earth. I don't think that is true. But in any event... has nothing to do with Shabti Tzvi. I'm not saying, it's just I suspect him of being scientifically a little off base. Yeah. I was taught as a child, I hope that's still in vogue, that the earth revolves around its own axis and it also revolves around the sun. Is that the case? Okay, just want to make sure I'm not, my knowledge of astronomy is limited.
Yeah.
Anyway, Ravashi says that Moshe Rabbeinu may have indeed known exactly when Chatzos is, but the Palga Urta Ditlesar Nahige Nage Arbesar Havakoi. That this whole story, which starts with in Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Dal Vayomer Moshe. Okay, so we're going to have to ask the question who Moshe is addressing, because the Torah doesn't spell that out. But be that as it may, the Gemara now, in the name of Ravashi, is addressing the question, when did Moshe make this statement? And the Gemara says that this was late at night, going into the 14th, meaning it's the night following the 13th of Nisan, going into the 14th. Nagi means the next morning when daybreak would be the 14th. Right, this would be the time for Bedikas Chametz. Of course, at that particular moment, Moshe Rabbeinu was not commanding anyone to do Bedikas Chametz.
Yeah, but what? Bedikas Chametz on the 14th night.
No.
9 of the 14th going into the 15th.
Right.
Oh, you're right. The night after the 13th going into the 14th. And that's exactly what we're saying here. But not because of B'dikas Chametz. He's telling them exactly, and he's giving them a 24-hour notice of when Max Pechoris is going to take
They're all awake at midnight. He's talking to them at midnight.
Right. I'm not sure if he's exactly at midnight, because you remember the Gemara is going to say that maybe it wasn't exactly midnight.
No, it sounds like he's saying just like right now.
Right, but like right now.
Not the same time. Not the same time.
same time tomorrow, but I don't know if it was 1 minute to 12. But you're right, it was pretty late at night. That's for sure.
Just like midnight tonight, midnight tomorrow.
Right.
And again, at 11:59, he's addressing them.
Right.
As the clock is moving, he's saying.
Well, look at the next line, Evan. That's why we're saying it was 11:59. It says, "V'hachi kamar Moshe Yisrael." This is what Moshe said to Bnei Yisrael. Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu lemachar kachatzos halayla. So keep in mind, Rabbi Osai, that the way we have it here, Moshe, in the Gemara's interpretation, Moshe is addressing Klal Yisrael. Okay, just keep that in mind. We'll get back to that in just a second. Yeah. And what is he saying to Klal Yisrael? Kachatzos halayla ki ha'idna. This time tomorrow night, ani yotzei b'toch Mitzrayim. That Hashem told me that at this time tomorrow night, which is the night of the 15th, I'm going to go out in Mitzrayim and destroy the firstborn. So what Rav Ashi seems to be saying is that it wasn't exact, if I understand correctly, Eben, it wasn't exactly at midnight. And even if it was at midnight, that's not what Moshe really is trying to convey. He's just trying to tell them that tomorrow night at midnight, this is going to happen. So Rabosai, this is a pella to me, that the Gemara is saying that Moshe is addressing Klal Yisrael. Ko amar Hashem kachatzos halayla niyotze b'toch Mitzrayim. Because if you read Pasuk Ches, v'yardu kol avadecha elei lai, clearly Moshe Rabbeinu is addressing Paro. In fact, I think Rashi says it explicitly, yeah. Vayomer Moshe, Pasuk Dalid, Ko amar Hashem, bi'omdo lifnei Paro, nemru lo. He's standing in front of Paro. It's very difficult for me to understand that he's standing in front of Klal Yisrael. Okay, so look, our Gemara is Rav Ashi. Who is it? Rav Ashi, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be, well, Rashi is not committed to explain the Pesukim according to Rav Ashi. Rashi is explaining the Pshuta Shel Mikra, and he's standing in front of Paro. So in one of these notes here, he tells us, in the name of the Ein Yaakov, which I have with me, why is it that the Gemara, Rav Ashi, is not happy with this interpretation that Moshe Rabbeinu is standing in the presence of Paro? And he says the following. He says that there's a rule with regard to all Eser Makos, which he applies to the last Mak as well, that Moshe Rabbeinu gives a 3-week warning to Paro. And that seems to be Chok V'lo Yavar. If we had time, we would go through this. But he says the Hasra for each Makkah was 3 weeks prior to the Makkah. But here, we're talking about a Makkah that's going to take place not 3 weeks from now, but rather 24 hours from now. And Cain, lo yitachin, it's impossible to say that on the Leil Arbos of Nisan, Moshe Rabbeinu got this Nevuah and immediately warned Paro. The Makkah took place immediately tomorrow, v'lo milu shalosh shvuos le Hasra. Ubehechre shalel arbasa benisan omer zos li Yisrael. Vatorin nokta es haloshon she omar li Yisrael. Okay, I'm just pointing out that you have to really go through the psukim very carefully, according to Rav Ashi, if this pshat is right, and see exactly when there's a shift over here, because clearly Pasuk Ches is not addressing Klal Yisrael, even Pasuk Zion. No, well, Pasuk Zion could be addressing Klal Yisrael. Although, L'chol B'nei Yisrael, it's very strange, he's talking to B'nei Yisrael, and he's mentioning B'nei Yisrael. Okay, maybe that's...
This 3-week warning, that I find it strange.
Yeah.
Because when you read through the Pesukim, it seems that, you know, he appears before Pharaoh, I mean, he throws up the soot in the air, and it comes. I mean, it's...
So you know what, Michael, I'm going to plead the fifth on this one.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just telling you, I should have photocopied it for you. It's right here, number chav test, if you want to, you see it later. But anyway, I'm just telling you that it's a very strange thing. Rav Ashi spells it out that Moshe Rabbeinu is talking to Klal Yisrael. Now, you should know one thing here. If you have the Masifta, and I don't know if it's in your Gemara as well, the Masifta says that we should take out the word Li Yisrael. Yeah. And he quotes Midrashim that have the same exact text that we do, minus the word Yisrael. So that would be exciting, because then Moshe Rabbeinu is not addressing Klal Yisrael. He's standing in front of Paro. But if you do accept the word Yisrael, then you have to go down this route of the Marsha that you need a 3-week warning in order to give the Makkah. By the way, Michael, again, as I told you, I plead the fifth here, but I just want to share with you one line of the Marsha. The Marsha says that in Makas Choshech, right, which was the last Makkah before Makas Bechoros, Moshe says to Paro, Lo yira panav, I'm not going to be seeing you. And according to Chazal, it took 3 weeks until Makas Choshech came about. So in other words, let me just read you the line. He says, Lo yitochin shomer zol suparsha miyad lachar makas choshech. Omar leparo, Moshe says to Paro, Shelo yira panav. The oz hisrbo al makas bechoros. So the hasra came from makas bechoros immediately following choshech, which was 3 weeks before Makas Bechoros actually took place. Alright, let's go on. Now we have a new pasuk. And this pasuk is in Tehillim, Perek, Peivav. And there's a word missing in the Gemara, which he points out on the bottom, should be added to the Gemara, Tfilo L'David. Okay, that's the first pasuk in Kapitel Peivav. And the second pasuk, Shamra nafshi ki chasid ani. If you look in the Torah R, you'll see that there's a long discussion here, a long discourse here between David and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he says, Hatei Hashem oznecha aneni. He asks God to listen, hearken to his prayers. Ani v'evyon ani. And then he says, Shamra nafshi, protect my soul. Ki chasid ani, hosha avdecha ata, ata lokai abotech elecha. Hosha avdecha. Now, Rabosai, you can give me many different answers to the following question. I'm looking for one particular answer, only because I'm prejudiced. But why is David praying for Yeshua? I mean, that's a question you could ask on like half a tillin. So I know you can give me many different answers. You know, David had so many crises in his life, you know, whether it was with the Plishtim who tried to destroy him, whether it was his own son Avshalom and others, you know, rebelled against him. But my take on this, and I'm going to try to see if I can weave this into the sugya, is that David HaMelech was afraid of one great thing that would bring his life to an end. One great sin, and that was what? Bathsheba. That's what I think. And what moves me here is to say that David HaMelech, it's very odd that David HaMelech is coming with credentials in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Chazal is going to say his credentials are that he, you know, he took a lot of slack from Mephibosheth, that he was not afraid of being embarrassed, and this, that, and the other thing. According to one day, he woke up at midnight every night, and you know, he was not like the other kings. You know, it's very odd that David has to bring all these credentials in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and almost, if you pardon the phrase, boast about his chassidus. I am a true chassid. You know, the Mesillas Yesharim is famous for saying that a chassid is like a ben etzel aviv, that if you know that your father would want something, you don't even wait till your father asks for it. If you know this will bring nachas ruach to your father, you're going to go to all ends if you're a loyal, beloved son that loves his father. And that's what a chassid is, klapei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He doesn't just read the Shulchan Aruch and say, well, these are the exact, you know, these are the requirements, the nitty-gritty absolute requirements of Allah, and I'll do what I have to do, and that's it. There's something called chassidus. So it's very funny that David is coming in front of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and he's, you know, he's showing all his chassidus, his whole list. I thought maybe David in this context is praying for something that would, in a sense, counterbalance the chait that he was so afraid of. In any event, let's see the machlokas in the Gemara. Levi v'Rabbi Yitzchak, what is David telling us that he's a chassid? Telling HaKadosh Baruch Hu, excuse me, that he's a chassid. Chad Amar, according to one opinion, Kach Amar David HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ribono Shel Olam lo chassid ani. With a question mark, you know, it's a retort. Shekol Malchei Mizrach Umarav Yeshenim Ad Shalosh Shos. Right, that's the Gemara at the beginning of Masechta Brachos, that they sleep until the third hour. Vani, by that time I've been awake for 9 hours already, right? 6 hours of the night and 3 hours of the day. Vani, chatzos laila akum lahodos lecha. Lahodos lach. So David HaMelech really has some great credentials here in terms of his hodah. So one of the commentaries in the Ein Yaakov is called the Anaf Yosef. Have you ever heard of it? If you're not a Bucky in Ein Yaakov, you would have heard of him from a different place. On what? On the Medrash. Anaf Yosef is like one of the super commentaries on the Medrash. So he's less famous for his work on the Ein Yaakov, on Agadata. But he says on this Agadata that when David HaMelech is kind of comparing himself, you know, how does he size up to other Malachim? And why does he need this comparison? So he says that this itself is a tefillah, is a prayer that David HaMelech is praying to Hashem. How so? So here he introduces a concept which is very, you know, it's a concept that's borrowed from the world of ethics, of Jewish ethics. It's called Pizur HaNefesh. Pizur HaNefesh, I think, means, again, I could be wrong about this, when a person is preoccupied with many different things. I don't know if you've ever had the experience in the middle of davening, you find yourself, you're at the end of davening, and like, where did it pass? You know, if you have a lot of things on your mind, and I don't know if this is typical of contemporary society or it was always that way, even back in, you know, in Fiddler on the Roof, you know, what was the name of the place? Anatevka? But whatever it is, you know, our mind tends to wander and there's so much on our mind. So that's called Pizur HaNefesh. And according to the Anaf Yosef, Pizur HaNefesh is a very dangerous thing because it brings a person to, or it reflects a state of worry. You know, when you have so much on your mind that you can't, your nefesh is mefuzah, you know, it's spread out in so many different ways. And he says the following, that the disease, so to speak, the element of pizur nefesh is very typical of malachim, because kings have a lot on their head. But what's the antidote? What saves the king? Because he says that pizur nefesh is very dangerous. I think he means to the heart. You know, it's very dangerous. If you have so much worry, you know, stress in your life that weighs down your heart, you're a great candidate for a heart attack, Chas v'Shalom, right? So what saves the king? So this, I don't know if he knew Dr. Seuss, you know, the Anaf Yosef. Dr. Seuss has a book called The King's Stilts. Have you ever read it? It's mamish one of my favorite books. I like it better than Shakespeare. Anyway, the theme of Dr. Seuss's King Stilts is that the king needs time during his daily schedule to let off steam and enjoy life. And he goes on the stilts, and it's a whole story. I really recommend that you read the book and read it to your children, your grandchildren, whatever it is. The bottom line is that the Anaf Yosef says that kings, he doesn't say they play tennis or they climb on stilts in order to offset the balance of all their worries, but he says that they get involved in different tanugos. You know, the kings have various pleasures. You know, I'm thinking King Henry VIII, you remember the banquets and the dust and the end. So all that is to, in the wives, you know, it's all that to the counterbalance the pizur HaNefesh. Comes along David and he turns to the Ribono Shel Olam. And he says, I also have a lot of daigus. I also am suffering from pizur HaNefesh. It's a great challenge. But I'm not like the other kings. They have one up on me. They have this antidote of tanugim nifloim that most people don't have the ability to enjoy.
They sleep at night.
Yeah, and not only do they sleep at night, they even sleep late into the day, right? So they have all sorts of pleasures. The Amar David HaMelech, Yeshli Pizar HaNefesh, Kamo Shar Malachim, but Eini Mis'anik B'Tanugi HaMalachim. HaMalachim, I don't have the Tanugas. Is Lachain Bikesh Shamra Nafshi Ki Chasid Oni. It's a beautiful pshat. He's saying that David is turning to God, and he's saying, as a result of my unique situation in contrast to the other Malachim, I need divine help. Because without your shmira, without your protecting me, chas v'sholem, my heart would give in, would give out. You know, I wouldn't be able to take it all.
He adds another pasuk here on the bottom. He said that shmira is not with Bnei Yisrael when they ask for melech. If you act wickedly, Shmuel says, but you and the king will perish. So
he was afraid of, like, the klola.
To avoid any association with some kind of iniquity, David deliberately belied the people's assumption that through having a king, they would resemble the other nations. To this end, David served with piety and devotion, in contrast to the other kings who preserved what you said, glory and comfort.
So he was protecting Klal Yisrael. Because the whole license for receiving a king, for asking for a king, would have to be if our king is different than other kings. If we're imitating and we want to look like the other nations and have a king, that's not good.
That's what Shmuel was warning them.
So David HaMelech here is, in a sense, protecting Klal Yisrael. So he's saying to the Ribono Shel Olam, they didn't ask for a king to be like the other kings who are involved in all sorts of pleasures in this world and they sleep late in the morning. They got a king who's dedicated to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore, retroactively, I guess you could say, we can justify their desire for him.
What do you say on the
Who is he quoting? Is he quoting anybody?
That's Pnei Yoshua.
Oh, the Pnei Yoshua. Wow, the Pnei Yoshua, that's big.
Tell us the first.
That's big. Pnei Yoshua is big. I didn't know that the Pnei Yoshua would even comment on it. I got to, you know, if I was learning brachas, I would use the Pnei Yoshua for the Mondays and Wednesdays, not for the Tuesdays and Thursdays. I never would have expected the Pnei Yoshua to give such a maracha. Very good. The Edoch. Now we have another opinion. What was David actually trying to? What credentials was he bringing in front of the Ribono Shel Olam? Kacham and David Tanya Kodesh Baruch Ribono Shel Olam. Lo chasid ani shekol malchei Mizrach u'mayrav yoshvim agudos bichvodom. They sit in these groups. You know, they're surrounded by people who are giving them glory and honor. He says on the bottom again, in the name of the eight. This is not the Anaf Yosef, but the Eitz Yosef. Another commentary on the Agadita that kol diburi malachim binyani malucha ubekvishas medinos v'chadome. The kings have such glory because they address, you know, issues of life and death, of war and so forth, for the entire Jewish community. Vani, but I yadai mulchlochos bedom. So, Rav Osher, I'm going to just take a minute's break. Sorry, I apologize.
Yeah. Yeah.
I might have to go to a funeral. I just got the word about my chavrusa. We learned Perek HaZov together. Hashem Yikom Domo, his neshama should have an aliyah. Rav Moshe Tversky. The funeral's at 2:00 today. So I'm going to have to leave to Levaya in a few minutes. I just want to dedicate this Sheila Mafreo, or at least the last minute or two, to the memory of Rav Moshe Tversky. He was a great Talmud Chacham, a great person, very big tzanua. The Gemara has the second opinion that David says to the Ribono Shel Olam, I am a chassid because what I do is not to dedicate myself to the glory of kingship, to Inyani Malucha, but rather Yodai Maluch Lachos Bedam. My hands are full of blood, of dam, I paskin on issues of dam nida. If we neder the next year, we'll try to get into this more in detail. B'shfir u'b'shilya kidei l'tayr isha l'bayla. We'll stop here.